Welcome to Strength for Today's Pastor, conversations with current senior pastors and leaders which will strengthen and help you in your pastoral ministry. And now, here's your host, Bill Holdridge of Poimen Ministries.
Welcome to Strength for Today's Pastor. Again, I am with Tad and Charity Skeffer, and they told their story of how the Lord brought them into Christ and brought them to one another, and how they became one through marriage. And it was a fascinating story that you can listen to by going back to the previous episode here on Strength of Today's Pastor. And then Tad previously had done a podcast on the subject of coming out of Calvinism, which is a fascinating story, but also with some very important understandings from the Scripture about Reformed theology, but also its biblical response. So that was excellent too. So either one of those are great to refer to in going back into this catalog of the Skeffer Chronicles. So anyway, here we are again, you two. Thanks again for joining me on this episode of Strength for Today's Pastor.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Bill.
You're welcome. And so what we want to do is we want to go into the ministry aspect of your marriage. The Lord decided to bear fruit through you two in the area of serving Him in the kingdom. And so let's talk about that. Let's start with your calling into ministry. And I know that each of you have your own story to tell on that. So Tad, why don't you go for it?
Yeah. And some of this may have been shared a little bit in the coming out of Calvinism episode, but when the Lord grabbed a hold of me, and it was a fairly dramatic conversion, and my life was so radically changed, and what He'd done in me was so fulfilling and genuine that I knew I wasn't going to be satisfied doing anything else in life other than serving Him. I had to serve the Lord, and I didn't really even know or care what that looked like, but I had to give my life back to the Lord. And so having grown up in this Reformed church, I went back to what I knew and started attending again with my family and where I'd grown up. And there was a ordination process that I was a part of that was more of a mentoring program, and it was checking the boxes in the sense that it was getting me to a title, and but it wasn't fulfilling really what I felt that ministry was going to and should be. And so I would call it a coincidence, but the Lord had us unintentionally really show up and visit a Calvary chapel. And it was there at the Calvary that I, over time, grew to love the teaching of the Word, and that the Spirit was at work within the life of that church, and it was obvious, and I wanted to be a part of it. And so even though I had been close to ordination within the Reformed Church, the Lord told me, you need to go where you're growing, and that was Calvary Chapel. And so I had to make a decision in my life that was no small decision. It was difficult and a challenge of whether I was going to continue in the ordination process in this denomination that felt like to me I wasn't really growing, but I was going to get ordained, and I could fulfill this desire that I had that I felt was from the Lord to serve Him, or just go to Calvary Chapel and truly grow and be fed and nourished and experience life. And that was an easy decision to make when the Lord had said I needed to go where I was growing. And so I had to set down my ordination, and we started attending Calvary Chapel. And about 6 months into it, we had turned out that we took over the nursery, and that isn't exactly what I had in mind when it was serving the Lord in whatever capacity, but it was whatever capacity. And so we did it with all of our heart, and we loved it. We loved those kids, and served the Lord well in the nursery, and that turned into do you want to run the children's ministry? And we agreed to that. And the next thing you know, I'm fast forwarding a little bit, but I got asked to be on staff. And I was not given a title. I was more of an intern, and I was totally content with what I was doing. And I was leading some junior high, and we were running children's ministry and doing maintenance and yard work and all of that stuff. And so that's kind of how the Lord got me into ministry within a Calvary chapel.
And how was all of that for you, Charity? What was going on with you during that time? I mean, obviously you were involved with children's ministry and all the things that Tad was doing. Tell your story.
Well, obviously growing up Mormon, I was really good at checking check marks, and administration was one of the gifts the Lord had given me. And so I honestly feel when people say, hey, do you remember the day you got saved? For me, it wasn't so much one day. It was kind of this progression. And part of that progression, I think, coming from Mormonism to that denominational church, I would say I believed the ministry of the gospel, but I almost just transferred my workspace personality and just transferred it to kind of a different type of Christianity. And so I would love to just say, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make sure I serve the Lord, because that's part of the check marks. But I don't know that I really understood grace fully. And I don't know that I really had, even though I had gone back to the Word to try to find my foundation, I don't know that I had really had a thirst for the Word. I just thought, hey, I've found it now, and now I can go start doing again because I'm a doer. And so I was just like, okay, I'll go teach Sunday school. I'll go do whatever needs to be done. And so when we got to Calvary Chapel, like Tad said, we started doing nursery and doing children's ministry, and that's fulfilling for me because I'm a doer, and it validates me to say, hey, as long as I'm serving, it feels like I'm doing what I'm supposed to do and I'm a good Christian. And as they asked Tad to come on staff, I thought, well, that's great. That's what he's wanted to do. But as the Lord brought us through, obviously, raising a couple kids and our adoption, which was a huge roller coaster of emotion and struggle, the Lord allowed me to go through those things to show me that, Charity, no amount of your doing will equal the formula that you think it should. And so he brought me to places where he said, Charity, you are going to have to give up everything and understand that I am the one who is the doer, not you. And so I would say when we first came to Calvary Chapel, I loved serving. I loved all of the family avenue that that provided. But as I kind of got around women and started joining the Bible study, just because I'm an extrovert and I want to get involved in things, I started seeing these women who were so grounded, and seeing Tad, you know, just digging into the Word. And I remember in my doer personality, he was so being validated by ministry. And I was a young mom with a toddler who was my personality and trying to challenge everything I did because she felt like she should be able to have a say, and a colicky baby. And I remember going to a shower that Calvary Chapel women threw for me. And I was like, they don't even know me. We just started coming here. I don't know why they're throwing me a shower. And I remember there was this older woman there who said, can I just hold him while you have the shower? I said, he's going to scream the whole time. And she said, I'm just going to take him outside then. And she walked around the building numerous times so that I could just sit there and enjoy this. And I started watching how it wasn't about checking off a check mark. It was about living it out and being the hands and feet of Jesus. And it started kind of transforming my view of what following Jesus was. That it was about, we don't serve him to check off a check mark that you're a good Christian. We serve him out of an outpouring of that love that he showed us. And that no amount of me serving could ever say, Lord, I believe I'm paying you back for what you did for me, because I could never, ever do enough to pay him back. And so even though Tad was growing in ministry and he had this digging in the Word, mine was kind of a slow transition of loving to be around people, loving to serve, but trying to morph that into doing it for the right reasons. And so it was kind of this walk where I remember asking our pastor's wife, because Tad was so loving ministry, and I was cooking dinner and waiting for him to get home at 6 p.m. every night, and then he wouldn't come home because they'd have an event at church and he had to help set up for it last minute. And so I remember going to the pastor's wife saying, "Your husband's in ministry, and so how do you deal with the fact that he's doing ministry all the time, but he's not home for dinner when you have dinner on the table?" And she just said, "Charity, would you like to go through the one-year Bible with me?" And I'm like, okay, she's going to show me verses that I can give to my husband to show him he's in the wrong. And as we started going through the Word, she just kind of started saying, "Hey, what did you find out of your reading this week?" And as I started just kind of having to communicate what the Lord was saying to me, it really was Him just ministering to my heart and molding me into not a doer of things, but just more of a Mary sitting at His feet instead of doing like Martha. And so it kind of was a slow transition that I think Tad was very patient, where I may have been putting a little more workspace into it, but it was this sweet thing of, as I was being grounded in the Word and as these women were discipling me in the Word by example and by walking through the Word with me, it made me go, this light's coming on of this grace-filled relationship with Jesus. And then I kind of started coming to that same point with Tad of, I want people to understand this gracious God who says, your works are dirty rags. And it's about a love relationship that is so much sweeter than checking off check marks. And so it was a very slow transition for me, but especially I feel like the Lord said, I've given you an extrovert personality. I've given you an administrative gift, and I want to use that to come alongside Tad in the ministry I've called him to. And I would say that's been the most enjoyable thing for me, is just saying, hey, honey, how can I help you with the giftings the Lord's given me and with the things that you're going to need as the Lord works in you? What can I do for you? And so that was kind of my slow transition into being a pastor's wife, I guess.
The wife of a pastor, a pastor's wife.
Yeah.
I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. That's what happened to both of you. Yeah. You just were grateful to give your life back and learning the channel of grace to us, and then, you know, reflecting some of that back to Him and saying, yes, Lord, here I am, your servant hears, and I will go and do. As a response, that's so foundational, and it's so simple in so many ways, isn't it? But how many of us miss that? You know, and like a mentor friend of mine says, we're not human doings, we're human beings. You know, someone that Christ loves and wants to flow through, not, like you said, Charity, just clicking off the boxes. I love that. Yeah, I've been a box clicker myself in the past at times. So those are great foundational things, and just from a pastoral perspective, I'm sure you'd agree with this, that, you know, the pastor who develops people into the understanding that you both have arrived at is the pastor that is going to be discipling people into the kind of motivation for ministry that is God's motivation for ministry. It's His heart. You know, He puts His law and His motivation and His power into our hearts and minds, and then says, okay, I want you to figure out what I've given you and then present it back to me, and I'll work through you. I'll do it. I'll do a work that you could not have imagined.
Power of grace.
Power of grace. Okay, so that takes us into fast forwarding. You were there at the Calvary Chapel in Linden, Washington for, what, around 10 years?
Was it? I believe that we were there for about 6 years or so.
Okay, yeah. 6 years. So 6 years, and then some things happened, a string of very wonderful things took place to bring you here to Ellensburg. Let's hear about that. How did this church plant get started? It kind of happened.
Yeah, so some wonderful and some painful things. You know, there was a transition at the church, and we kind of knew that our time there was up. And so Well, what next, Lord? We want to give our lives to you. What does that mean? What does that look like? Where are we going? Okay. Well, at this point in our lives, we had been in the process of adoption for about 7 years with the same two kids from Haiti. And it was, we were told it'd be 6 to 8 months to adopt from Haiti. And here we were 7 years later, and our kids are growing up, 3,500 miles away from us. And we'd been there to visit frequently and often. And so we thought maybe at this point, with the transition in ministry, the kids, when we were in Haiti, were legally ours. And we thought maybe the Lord is pushing us towards being missionaries in Haiti. And so I had also worked at Costco. I'd hung on to my job at Costco while I was on staff at the church. But I quit that and cashed out my 401k. We paid off all of our debt. We rented a house in Haiti. We bought furniture, water filtration system, battery inverter. We were ready to hit the floor running to do overseas missions in Haiti. We were waiting for a little bit more support to come in. During this time of waiting and garnering some more support, I got asked to lead a home Bible study that was being planted here in Ellensburg, Washington. And so I said, well, I don't have a job. I have the time to drive over there and do it. So came over and led this Bible study here and had a great time doing so. Went back home and they called me up about a month later and said, hey, we really enjoyed your teaching. We'd like to have you come back out again. And so it came out again, and it was at this time they said, we want to be a church and we think you're supposed to be the pastor. And that was a lot to take in at that point. And so Charity and I prayed the whole way home and just put it before the Lord and like, what's going on? We thought you were taking us to Haiti, but there was no denying that this is something that God brought to us. I didn't have to pursue it. I didn't have to chase it. And this is what he had for us. And almost inexplicably, we couldn't, wrap our minds around it completely, because what about our kids in Haiti, And so, but we were obedient and called those who were going to sponsor us as missionaries and said, the Lord has redirected our steps to Central Washington instead. And I think all of that was in the Lord's wisdom. I don't know that I would have quit a job to move to Ellensburg, Washington. It's not as glamorous as being a foreign missionary, but we came out here instead and planted the church in June of 2009. And to finish kind of the aspect with our children, the earthquake in Haiti happened in January of 2010. And with all the cholera and disease that was spreading following the earthquake, all kids that were in process of adoption were they came home on refuge visas. And so the kids were able to come home just a little over 6 months later anyway. And so our family was complete and the Lord planted us here in Ellensburg.
That is impressive. And as you were talking about that adoption thing, I didn't realize there was a 7 year.
It took 10 years for the whole thing to transpire. They came home after about 9 and a half. Yeah. And then the adoption was completed about 10 years. Yeah.
So you're here in the States. They're still in Haiti. They are legally your children. And your heart is longing to have your children that are legally yours be part of your family. Boy, I'm just thinking of the Father who has predestined us unto the adoption of sons by Jesus Christ to himself. Yeah. And the longing of the heart of the Father and the longing of the heart of the Son, to finally have us reunited with him or united with him in the family that he's designed us to be part of. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a rich picture in my mind.
Yeah, it's a rich picture, and it was painful to go through for a long time. We had two bio kids as well, and every time we'd sit at a meal and pray before our meal, it would be, and help Isaiah and Nancy to come home. It got to the point for them, and certainly for our two adopted children as well, like, I don't think this is ever going to happen. In fact, after the earthquake happened and we flew to Miami and the kids, we met them there, and we had to make sure that all our paperwork was in order before we, you know, went home with our kids. And when that time was right there, Charity said to my oldest, who was 11 at the time, and said, "Isaiah, you're coming home."
Mm.
And he looked up at her and said, "It's not true, Mama. It's not true."
Mm.
But it was. It was true. I came home, and yeah, now our family was finally complete.
Yeah. So. Yeah, awesome. Charity, what were your experiences during that season?
Well, as always, the painful times are the training ground, usually. So 10 years, I remember having so many conversations with the Lord of, I don't understand why it wouldn't be your will for those kids to be home. It doesn't make sense to me. And I remember a specific incident where I called the house mom that was over our son's home, because the girls and boys were in a different home. And I just said, "Hey, I don't know what he needs for his birthday. Would you tell me?" And she said, "Oh yeah, here's a couple things he needs." And she said, "I just want to share with you a little bit of what happened." And she shared the story of how he'd really been struggling, getting a lot of discipline. And she kept trying to, you know, discipline him every time he did it. And finally, she just hit her knees and said, "Lord, I don't know how to get through to this kid." And he said, "Next time he does something he shouldn't, just bring him in and sit there and talk to him and get on the internet and look at some of his favorite things." And she said, "I did that, and he hasn't left my side for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And he's been the best behaved kid here." And even though I know her heart was to try to help me as a mom just see a day in his life, it broke my heart, because I felt like she was doing my job.
Mm.
And I remember I got off the phone with her and I screamed and I yelled at the Lord and said, "That is my job and you won't let me do it." And I remember after I kind of threw a fit, as this is usually how it works with me in the Lord's relationship, he says, "Okay, are you ready to open the word and hear from me?" And so I opened the word, and the Lord just gave me verses that showed me how he is a better parent than I am.
Mm.
And for the last 7 years, I had prayed for him to somehow send someone to love on my kids like I would love on him, because I don't know where they're at during the day, but he does. And he said, "Charity, I did that, and now you're mad at me." Mm. And it was just kind of this thing where he just said, I get that this is your heart, but you need to understand my heart for you and my heart for your kids." And like you said, adoption is that beautiful picture of God's heart. And so the adoption was the very thing that I think trained us a lot for ministry of, you know, God's ways aren't our ways, but he is a good, good father. And he knows where everyone that you are ministering to and loving on, including your own family, is, what they're going through. And he is way better at parenting and shepherding than we are. And so we can trust him. And that's who we take all the burdens to, for our family, for our spouse, and for our church, essentially. So
your story and the pain involved, the painful part of being church planters and being called into ministry, you know, we on a human level, we say, send them off to seminary, have them get ordained, give them some tools on church administration, and then they can just go out and do it. But you're telling the story of the work that the Lord does in us, and the waiting involved, and the pain of waiting, and the pain of expectations, our own human expectations being dashed to the ground, dying to those expectations, learning to submit, and then enduring until finally whatever it is that the Lord has in mind starts to happen. And that's your story, but that's the more realistic story of how the Lord prepares a man, a woman, a couple to do what you guys have been doing here in Ellensburg now for since 2009.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's the forging that takes place in real life is real shaping. And the Lord uses that. And I know, you know, she's been my anvil as the Lord swings away a lot of times. So, yeah.
But it's all necessary, isn't it? I remember the Lord asking me a question early in the ministry. And it was during a time of prayer, actually, while I was getting ready to teach a Bible study. And I was ready to give up. I was ready to walk out of the building, you know, that night. I was so discouraged. And then a verse of scripture came into my mind, just a part of a verse. So then death works in us, but life in you. And what the Lord showed me in that real frozen moment of time was that I'm gonna kill you so that life will be flowing through you to them. And killing meaning, you know, the death to myself. And I had a question to answer from the Lord. Am I willing to do this? And I settled it right then. You know, in that prayer, I was praying for the Bible study that I was about to teach, and all this dialogue was going on between me and the Lord. I said, yes, it's worth it. If they are the beneficiaries of what you do to me or do in me, it's worth it, and I'm signing up for it. That doesn't mean that over the years, it's been just this free-flowing joyride. I mean, there's a lot of pain. But it's worth it. It's ultimately, and you know, Paul the Apostle put it this way, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glories which will be revealed in us. Thanks for sharing that. I mean, that's really great. So now you're in Ellensburg. You planted the church officially, I guess, in June of 2009. And it's been going now for a while, a number of years. And it's been quite a thing. Ellensburg isn't a huge place. It's, you told me, 10,000 people, basically. And then when the student body comes in, it swells to 20,000 from the local college. And yet your church has continued to be growing over the years and getting larger to where you outgrow this facility and need to get, you know, and you're in that place now. Talk about the process and what's been going on and what's on your heart for the church.
Yeah. Well, we had steady growth for very natural, organic, maintainable growth for many years. And over the last 3 years, we have had exponential growth. And the Lord already was doing work in me, and I had already had a connection actually with Poyman. I'll make a plug for Poyman here, and had Pastor Terry McNabb come out and help with just kind of getting my head around some of the administration and leadership tasks of that. But the church is growing and doing well. Like you said, we're looking for a structure, and in a smaller rural community, there just isn't a lot of buildings that fit our need. And so it's been a challenge, it's been a difficulty. I'm holding out that the Lord already knows the end from the beginning, and He's blessed us with the grace of having the joy of discovering where He's already been. And so I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be amazing. I don't know what it is yet, but it's going to be amazing. And when it comes to the ministry that we're a part of, one thing that I'm passionate about right now is we have a fairly young church. There's church planters in our church, and I don't necessarily know who they are yet, but we're going to discover who those are. And so we want to start a school of ministry, and hopefully we can send some folks out. So that's something I'm pretty excited about coming up.
So I want you to unpack that a little bit, Tad, that phrase, the joy of the discovery. Say that phrase again.
Well, the Lord knows the end from the beginning. He's already before us. He's already got a spot for us, and yeah, this is in all aspects of life, because he is the Alpha and the Omega. But as I am in the dark on what the future holds, this is what it means to walk by faith, right? To walk by fear is to not know the future and to have some doubt. But that's not who we are as believers. We don't know the future. And so we're in the dark about what that is, but our God is not, and He's light. And so He already knows what that is going to be. And so there is definitely a joy of going to what He's already marked out for us. And like you said, having been through some some real pain and trials and difficulties in our life, we know that he's always faithful and he's going to take care of us. And so I like to say that the Christian life is very much like a roller coaster. It's got its ups and downs, and it's, you know, it takes you around 360s, but if you stay on the track, and if you trust, you know, the track, and he's going to get you where he wants us to go, and it's a good place to be.
But you use the word joy in the middle of that sentence. So you've found and discovered joy in the midst of uncertainty and the unknown, but you know that the Lord knows the future, yeah, and not, that he's got it.
Joy's so not dependent upon on circumstances, uh-huh, and what's happening. And so as this is unfolding before us, he's got a perfect will for us that is going to be discovered for me at X number of days. And so since I know that's going to happen, I can have joy until I reach that point.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Hebrews 11, where Abraham went out not knowing where he was going, and he was waiting for the promise along with his heirs. And it's because he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And then I'm thinking of Joseph, who had the promise that his mother, father, and siblings were going to be bowing before him, and their sheaves were going to bow down to his sheaf, and that type of thing, in those two separate dreams. But here he is in prison. But Psalm 105 says that until the word of the Lord to Joseph came to pass, that same word tested him. So you find word in the middle, you find joy in the middle of these things because you know that the Lord is in it still. He's in it, even though we can't see it yet.
Yeah.
It hasn't materialized yet, you know? And you've experienced that, right?
That's good. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Charity?
Absolutely. I think that is, you know, with anything, whether you're in ministry or not in ministry, in parenting, in whatever you do, is just saying, you know, if the Lord is in it, then I can trust what's coming ahead, even though I don't know what that might be. And I always say it's like throwing all the cards up and getting excited because you're letting them land where the Lord wants them to land. Mm-hmm. And so even though it's kind of scary, it's also exciting at the same time because you know the Lord's in it. And so your joy comes from that, not the circumstances of knowing what's coming.
Mm-hmm. So. That's hope. I mean, hope, as I have understood it, is the confident expectation of a future divinely ordained good. I'm already enjoying it, even though it hasn't come. You know, that's what you're describing
here.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, I've only been around your church body, you know, that one Wednesday night, and it was a joy to be there. And I know a little bit about what you've told me concerning the numbers, but in a small facility, you know, which isn't going to be what you have eventually, but a small facility, look what the Lord has done through small things, you know, a small facility, great things he has done.
Yeah.
And, you know, that missions team that came back from Mexico, the Israel trip people that came back, and they had a testimony and the joy that was in the room when those things were being shared. So the Lord's doing good things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah, that's great. So what do you have to share as a word of encouragement to our listeners? I mean, this has been greatly encouraging. I mean, I'm glad that you shared the pain part of it, frankly, because, you know, not because I'm happy that you had pain, obviously, but that's the realistic part of the process, you know. Yeah. And it's necessary, it really is.
I guess I'll say this. You know, when I do premarital counseling, one of the things that I address right off the bat is that your greatest enemy is expectations. And so a woman, you know, expects a marriage to be one way, and a husband expects, and it's never those things. And that could be a way to summarize pastoring as well. Expectations are your enemies. And so I remember actually, now that I'm just talking about it, sitting down at a pastor's conference years and years ago. We just planted a year or 2 years ago, and Lloyd Pulley sat next to me. I didn't even know who he was, but he asked me what my expectations were. And I said, I don't have any expectations. You know, I just want to be obedient to what God has, and he can do whatever he wants to do. And that's maybe the counsel, the reminder, because we probably all know it, but like Peter said, I'll be faithful to remind you of these things that you know. That's the reminder that I would give, is to be careful with expectations and be in the moment and trust God right there, even if that is a very painful moment.
Great word. Charity?
Yeah, I think just to build upon that, having those expectations that are your own expectations, because I think a lot of people over the years, you know, as the church is either, you know, visibly healthy or it's growing, then people come up and they say, hey, well, something you guys are doing is working. And I just say, you know what? The reality of this is we just get to be so blessed to sit back and watch what God does. And really, we're just along for the ride. And so our expectation is God's going to do amazing things and we get to be along for the ride. And that is a sweet thing that he doesn't have to give us. He does it because he loves us and he's gracious to us. And one of the biggest things that has been hard for me is because I'm such an extrovert, I want to know everybody. And with the size of our church now, I can't. It's impossible. And I remember a couple years ago having a conversation with the Lord saying, God, this is too big. It's unmanageable. Instead of finding the one family that's new this week, it's 20 families. And we can't possibly have all these people over for dinner like I'd like to. And he just said, Charity, I don't need you. I don't need to use you. I can use whoever I want. And so this isn't about you. This is about what I'm doing. And if I want to put it on someone's heart to have somebody over for dinner, I can do that. You don't have to be that person. I just want you to live in what I ask you to do today, filled with my spirit. And I just want you to be okay with whatever that is. Mm. And so that's been a huge encouragement to me, that that's my expectation. God's going to do something amazing. And if he's gracious enough, he'll allow me to be a part of it. So.
Yeah, you both are saying basically the same thing, but in different ways. You know, live in the moment without expectations. Have expectations, but, you know, embrace what God is doing right now in your life. You know, I think that's kind of a summary. I probably botched that a little bit, but anyway, close enough, I guess. Okay, so before we go, and those words of encouragement are so appreciated from you both. Before we go, I just want to dive into this just for a little bit, because Charity, you have a very unorthodox vocation outside of the church, and I'll let you describe it, and then Tad, you have some insights into that in terms of ministry that I'm sure Charity shares with you, but I'd like you to say that too, so go ahead.
Yeah, so I am a funeral director, which I never, this is the walk with the Lord. You never think you will be in places he takes you. But the beautiful thing is for whatever he calls you to, he equips you for. And that is kind of what this vocation has been for me. The church got to a point where with it kind of growing, there were lots of other people who wanted to volunteer and have a part of what the Lord was doing. And so I was trying to step back from the things I usually did to allow them to do that. And at that same time, a friend of ours who owned a funeral home came and said, hey, would you be interested in working here? I'm like, I don't think I want to do that. And as we kind of prayed about it, and Tad said, I feel like, you know, you need something to fill your time because you're a doer and you're administrative. But I also feel like this is a ministry that is an extension of the ministry that we do at Calvary Ellensburg. And so I said, okay, but Lord, I love in my administrative personality to set up a system and run with it. And there's no way you can do that with this job because it's a different situation, a different person, a different whole scenario you're walking into, and there's no way you can prepare for it. And so not only do I meet with families to kind of plan their arrangements, but I actually go into their homes to bring people into our care. And if you're looking for a space where there are some people who are in the most desperate times of their life, walking into their living room when they've lost the person who they love the most is a ministry that I am so blessed that the Lord chooses to allow me to do because there's no textbook for it. Everybody reacts differently. Everybody has different relationships. Every situation is different. It's not all, you know, 90-year-old grandpas who have just kind of slid over into heaven. And so there have been some times where literally in that vehicle going to the scene, I have had to be so desperate for the Lord. And then again, on the way back, having to deal with the situations that I find and trying not to carry that burden on my own. And, you know, just a quick situation, walking into a home where a dad had died of pancreatic cancer and his 13-year-old daughter sitting there. And she's, you know, sharing her heart a little bit with me about how she wants me to make sure I save all of the things that belong to her dad so she can have them. And then a week later, I get a call to the same address. And I think it's some sort of technical error. But as I get to that home, I find it was her mom who had died of a drug overdose a week later. And this 13-year-old girl is the one who found her. And I walk into that scene having been there a week before, and my heart just broke. And it's so hard not to just sit there and cry for the situation that this is. And knowing from being there a week earlier that this family is Buddhist, and that the only thing that could get this 13-year-old girl through this is Jesus, and she doesn't have him. And so it was a Saturday night, and that Sunday morning I went to church, and usually I can kind of drive home from the funeral home and just release all this to the Lord, because I know one of the things he's told me in ministry is these burdens on your heart are not meant for you to keep. They're meant to give them to the person who says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And so I kind of used that on my drive home to just release them to him. And for some reason, Sunday morning, it was still sitting there. And I just said, Lord, why are you still allowing this to sit on my heart? And so I went to the prayer corner for prayer. And I just said, I can't give a lot of details, but there's a 13-year-old girl who really needs some prayer. And it was so sweet, because in a small town like Ellensburg, the officer who was on scene went to our church. And then right after that service where I had asked for prayer for this 13-year-old girl, a gentleman who goes to our church came up, who's the chaplain, and he told me the story of how he was there before I was, and he left before I got there. And he got to tell that little girl about how God is so present, and he will meet you in the times you don't know what to do. And he asked if he could pray with her, and she said yes. And the Lord just knew my heart needed to hear that. And then on Monday morning, that the coroner she was going to go visit to try to collect the things was a guy who goes to our church. And so I just feel like the Lord uses his people in whatever avenue he can to just say, will you be my hands and feet? Kind of like we were talking about earlier. Will you be willing to just go and say, you don't know what's going to happen, but your expectation is that I'm going to show up. And he does every day. And there are so many times where I just say, Lord, I don't know why you put me here, but you promised you'd equip me for the things that my heart shouldn't be able to handle. And he's so faithful. And that's how I know I'm still supposed to be there. I say the first day that you don't equip me, I know I'm supposed to be gone. But it has been a beautiful extension of the Lord just using those things he's taught me in ministry, of that it just has to be a filling of his spirit. It can't be anything of me, and extending it out in the community in a different way.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said.
Yeah, I would just add that I had shared with you, Bill, that I don't know what it might be, the context might be in pastors' unique situations and communities, but I know that funeral homes are often, now that I have this inside track and go and help charity and do things that I never thought I would either, that funeral homes are often looking for people to help with the removal from where someone dies. And that would be a great opportunity, almost like a on-call chaplaincy to a degree, and a great way to plug in to find and minister to people who are genuinely, genuinely hurting, many of whom might never step foot in your church. And this is just an opportunity that for maybe a few hours a month, you could have that as be an option.
I know a pastor who, when he went into a community to plant a church, the first thing he decided to do was go to all the funeral homes in that community and say, listen, I know it's hard for you to find pastors that'll come and do services and so on. I just want to make myself completely available to you anytime. And so he that's what he did. And he was doing, you know, in that area of ministry. And like you said, that's where the hurting people are.
Yeah.
And that's where Jesus goes.
Amen.
He goes where the hurting people go. Amen. Well, thanks for joining me in this episode of Strength Through Today's Pastor. You guys, you're a blessing. And the Lord is using your lives to bless a community and a county and a state and in some ways the nation and internationally, I'm sure, as well. He's got great things in mind, and he's doing them.
Amen.
Thank you. Thank you so much,
yeah,
Bill.
Yeah, you're welcome. So Strength for Today's Pastor is hosted by Poiman Ministries. You can find out about Poiman Ministries by going to our website, and the announcer will give you that information at the close of this podcast. But thank you for listening, and may the Lord bless you richly.
Strength for Today's Pastor is sponsored by Poiman Ministries. You can find us at poimanministries.com. That's spelled P-O-I-M-E-N, ministries.com. If something in today's program prompts a question or comment, or if you have a topic idea for a future episode, just shoot us an email at strongerpastors@gmail.com. That's strongerpastors@gmail.com. May the Lord bless you as you serve Him, His pastors, and His church.